Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shirtlift. The show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's also heard on IPMNation.com on Saturdays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's an online news service that comes out of Concord, New Hampshire. And WBCQ is broadcast out of Arista County, Maine, in the beautiful town of Monticello. And the camp, this radio show is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a wonderful week-long family camp, a week-and-a-day family camp. Fighting a cold here, so please bear with me. And we have a very special guest online today. He's been a guest before, and he was also an instructor at camp last year. Tom DeWeese, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be with you. Thanks.
Well, yeah, it's always good to have you. Now, just let me introduce for the listeners here who have not heard him before. Although, if you listen to Patriot Radio anywhere in the country or probably anywhere in the world, you should be familiar with this man's name. He's the founder of the American Policy Center and probably, if not the top expert on Agenda 21, he's probably at least in the top three or four. And so much to the point where the Southern Poverty Law Center has taken note of his nefarious activities. Well, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You are the master conspiracy theorist. But for the sake of those who may be new to the term Agenda 21, now that we're not hearing that term, give us a little brief introduction. And what are they calling it now? Since it's people have been catching on, what is it called now?
Well, as you know, Agenda 21 was put together in 1992, what they called a comprehensive blueprint for reorganizing human society. And since that time, we've watched our society be reorganized with comprehensive development plans in the communities, assault on private property rights, the creation of non-elected regional councils that take government farther from the people, literally changing our government, and funding it all through federal grants. And we're seeing our country change. We started to attack this. At first, they were very proud of it, and you were hearing about it. Nancy Pelosi introduced it into Congress, said it was a comprehensive blueprint. We heard that term over and over again. Then as we began to make some noise about it, suddenly, kind of like Jonathan Gruber, they threw it behind their backs and said, what are you talking about? All that innocuous 20-year-old document that doesn't mean anything, it's purely voluntary. Yeah. And so, interestingly, this past September, the UN held yet another one of these mass meetings, and they rebooted it. They changed the name from Agenda 21 to the 2030 Agenda, 17 goals for reorganizing human society. Nothing new in it whatsoever. It's just all renamed, but at least it's not an innocuous 20-year-old document anymore. It's a three-month-old document.
Well, you know what's fun, what's interesting, a little supermarket down the street from me, people put stuff in the lobby, you know, and there was a little box that said, Boston 2030, we want to hear your opinion. Yeah, I took a few pictures of it. I said, yeah, these people, and thankfully nobody's paid any attention to it, you know, it was just sort of left alone. I think I put one of your newsletters in there, a few other things, you know, I'll tell you what I think about it. But yeah, so it's alive and well. And now let me ask you, let's say that, boy, you know, this guy, Tom DeWeese, doesn't sound right to me. What's going on here? Where can you find evidence of this happening in your town? What kind of things should people look for?
I think almost every community in the nation is being faced with trying to, you know, being forced to put together comprehensive development plans. You'll hear terms like, of course, sustainable development and smart growth. You'll see new regulations popping up that deal with your private property rights. And, you know, the smart growth programs, you start to see they put a line around the city, and they tell you that no growth can take place outside of that. That's urban sprawl, so we don't need that. So we end up with this area that's a very precise area. And when populations start to grow, then the only place you can grow is up, because you can't grow out. And this is when we start to see the creation of apartment buildings replacing single-family homes that grow into high-rise apartment buildings. We see this mostly in the cities now. More of the rural areas, you just see it beginning more and more difficult to live in the rural areas. Farmers find themselves under attack, conservation easements to grab the land, banning septic tanks so that you can't live on the land, making it harder. Eventually you give up and you move into the city, which is exactly what they want you to do. And this is where you start to see it.
Now, there is something that's relatively new, this so-called, it's a HUD, Housing and Urban Development Initiative. I love the term initiative, too, because when you hear the word initiative, it's usually a good thing. You know, some local people are doing something, taking initiative. But when you hear the government say it, it's usually the time to, hold your pocketbooks and your freedom, because, you know, something bad is coming down the road. What is this new Obama-driven initiative that plans to resettle people in these nice little rural and suburban towns around the country?
Now, this was announced in July of this past year. It's 377 pages long, this ruling, and it's called the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Rule. And what they try to explain it, they're talking about how they want to end discrimination, achieve balance and integrated living patterns for all citizens. And as you begin to look at that, and you think, well, what are they talking about here? Mm-hmm. Of course, we all want to be fair. We've already got anti-discrimination laws about you can't ban somebody from living in a certain neighborhood or buying a house or something. We hear this. We've been hearing this since the 60s. But all of a sudden, we have a problem here, and they are looking into details for income levels, religion, color, national origin, the people who live in the neighborhoods. You know how, back in the last census that was taken, people were very upset because they were asking such personal questions about who lives in the house and what ages are they and what is national origin and all these kinds of questions on something that's only supposed to count how many people we have.
Yeah, I remember. I refused to. The guy came up to me, the censor guy, and he said, "You're refusing to comply." I said, "I gave you the information that the Constitution requires." I said, "Anything more than that, you're refusing to obey the Constitution." So what you're saying is that this census, this all-intrusive, 10-page census, how many times you flush the toilet, how many pets do you have, how many people, how much money you make, what color's your hair, what's your favorite, all this crazy stuff. There was a method behind the madness. It wasn't just to help serve the citizens better.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently these kind of plans have been in place for a while, and they're getting around to doing this. So they're going through those census records, but they're also, as I understand it, they've got people going door-to-door asking some of these questions right now, trying to fill in the blanks. And what they're looking for here is the makeup of the neighborhood. And if they find that the neighborhood is out of balance – they set the ratios of what needs to be in each of those things, income levels, races, and national origin, and so forth, then their intention is to begin to change the neighborhood, to begin to move people in there to get a balance. This can be done by bringing in subsidized housing, again, the high rises and so forth. But what they're doing is they're plucking people out of low-income neighborhoods and putting them there. And so what's going to happen here, first of all, this begins to really show that private property rights is a thing of the past, but also property values will begin to go down. So people who have invested their life savings to build a home that they wanted, to live in a neighborhood they wanted to live in, suddenly they are the victims of social engineering, and they've got to be in balance.
So you get it. Let's say they determine, where's this arbitrarily, who determines what the balance should be? And isn't that what free people are supposed to determine, not government bureaucrats?
Well, this is where it gets interesting, Hal, because we've been warning about Agenda 21, sustainable development policies, and why they were dangerous. And up until now, at least you had this pretense that the local government had a say in it. You had all these non-governmental organizations, these private groups that were pressuring your elected officials to do things. You had planning organizations, and there were federal agents and so forth in there as well. But it had the pretense that your elected officials could vote on this and decide. We know that that's not necessarily true, because one of the things that would happen is community has to put together a comprehensive development plan, and these NGOs, these organizations would come in pressuring them to do that, and they'd say, no, look, here, we've got it all right here in a box for you. You don't even have to think. It's all right here, and we've got the money for it, too. So, and boom, these guys are rubber stamping this into place. Well, now, any of those communities that took those grants or take them in the future, suddenly HUD comes in and says, hey, you took the grant. We're going to tell you how you're going to do this. And what this has done is it is literally destroying local elected government, throwing it aside. Your elected officials who are doing this are voting themselves to be irrelevant. And the federal government comes in and dictates this is social engineering. And of course, it's social justice, the whole redistribution of wealth thing. But it's absolutely destroying our system of government.
So let's say you go to a town that's in a nice little rural area, not too far from a major city, let's say 20, 50, 60, 70 miles, and say, gee, they're all pasty faces here. You know, it's 99.9% or 92, whatever the case is. And you get some free-thinking progressives that live in town. They moved in from the city because they wanted to get away from the stuff. Oh, yeah, they get on the city council or the town council, and they buy into this. They get their they stack the planning board with their people. Next thing you know, there's a charrette or a visionary session, and some nice people from the local university, like New Hampshire Lifton's or one of these entities, and everybody, you know, they're sitting around drinking wine with their berets, and everyone thinks that they had something to do with this, right? And next thing you know, they've got this thing called the smart growth area, and they've got housing money and Section 8 housing, and it's all going to be so wonderful, and we're going to bring people in, and they're going to enjoy the wonders of our little town, and also they're going to vote the way we want them to vote. They have no connection to the town. They're cut off from their community, so it's really not going to benefit people who have no ties. And, you know, I can't afford to – I'd like to move out to some of these communities. I can't afford to live in Wellesley, Massachusetts. I live in Boston. I wouldn't mind moving to Newton, but I can't afford it, and I'm not complaining about it. I'd rather not really live in Newton, to be honest with you. I like it where I am before. But who cares? Make the community where you are better. You know, you don't have to have you don't have to live in. And I would love to move to a rural area, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. Hopefully it will. But I don't expect HUD. I don't expect Obama. I don't expect Donald Trump or anyone else to set me up. If I can afford it, if it's going to work out, it will work out. And most of these rural towns, there's not a big economy there. How is an economy, you know, it's maybe a rural economy, maybe there's one or two manufacturing concerns that hire most of the people in town. How are you going to sustain, and sustain in the positive sense, in the real sense? You're going to dump 1,000 people in the town of 5,000. And then, well, they're going to get their Section 8 houses. They're going to change infrastructure. How is that going to benefit them? And I've seen some examples of this. Millinocket, Maine. It was a mill town, two mills, one closed down, one operates at a 15% capacity. You can get a beautiful Victorian home for $15,000, what would cost you $2 million in Boston. And they're actually bringing people in from New Jersey, welfare recipients, who wouldn't, because it's cheaper for them to buy a house in Millinocket and set them up there, give them the food stamps and all that good stuff, and then pay the housing in New Jersey. So I've seen examples of that. And what about if they ever grant amnesty to these millions of illegals, where are you going to put them? You're going to put them in these this is my take on it. Am I out of line here, or do you think?
No, in fact, as you know, as I said, as they're looking at breaking it down by you know, ethnic background and income levels and all that, they're going to look at these other neighborhoods and they're going to say, oh, you don't have enough Syrian refugees here. You don't have enough of this. You don't have enough of that. And they're going to, you know, start to pour them in there. But as you're describing, you know, people wanting to move out to these more rural areas, in the cities, as they begin, you know, with the smart growth situation where populations grow and density grows, so single family homes are outlawed, as they've just announced they're going to do in Seattle, Washington, and they already did it in Portland and other cities. And so now you don't have single-family homes. The only thing you have are apartment buildings. So that means that in those cities where there are single-family homes, those costs are going to start to go up. And and anywhere you have that, you're finding that housing costs are soaring. And so low-income people certainly can't afford that. And, you know, you're creating a new ghetto is what you're doing with that. And the other part of this is the incredible thing, is this era when all we talk about is everything's racism. I find it incredible that here is this all-powerful government with these smug bureaucrats in the background making up this stuff, and they're sitting there and they are saying, well, these people live in this ethnic community and it's low income and everything, and we're going to move them out of there. We're going to pluck them out and we're going to put them in these other neighborhoods where they'll be better off. Talk about racism. They are deciding on their own that they're not happy there. Here are people, you know, you and I both, we would not live in a neighborhood we don't feel welcome in. We wouldn't move there. We're comfortable to live with people that have our same culture, our same ideas, maybe family there and so forth. The same thing is true of people who live in low-income neighborhoods. And to pluck them out of that, put them where they don't want to be and where they're not wanted, how does that help them with their self-esteem and their hope for the future? It just is a destruction of neighborhoods, a destruction of our society, and it's nothing but tyranny.
You've heard of Lewiston, Maine, of course, right, which is a very port city, post-industrial, used to be mills there and so forth. And after the Somalian UN debacle, there was some refugees. Can you imagine going to Somalia to say, we love you, we know what's best for you, we're going to take you out of your country, your culture, we're going to put you in a very cold post-industrial city in Maine. Now, Maine's a beautiful state. And Lewiston, it may not be the best place to be, but it's not the worst place to be, you see. But to take people from a wholly different religious background, religious tradition and culture, and where it's kind of hot, and put them there, of course, they're getting food stamps and all. And you're asking for trouble, and they got it. You know, they're getting trouble because it's just people just don't assimilate. You know, it's just difficult to do that. I can't imagine someone saying, hey, Hal, we know what's best for you. We're going to put you in Somalia. Are you crazy? You know, I want to be here, you know. I don't mind North Carolina, Virginia, a little warmer maybe, but no, I'm not going to go to Somalia. But that's so what we see if we don't reverse this. And we got to tell some good news here, too, because it's not all doom and gloom. These folks are not omnipotent. They have their weaknesses, and maybe we can spend the next 10 or so minutes we have left, 12 minutes, saying some things that are happening. And of course, you're on the show last time. We talked about this wonderful success story in the little town of Ringe, New Hampshire, where Camp Constitution actually holds its camp. But give me some other success stories. People are fighting back.
Well, this is the interesting thing, because, you know, for all the years we were fighting this thing, I rarely heard from an elected official of any kind. Usually, if I did, it was to deride me. But in the last 3 or 4 years, that's beginning to change. We are getting elected officials who get it, who understand what this is about. I was just in Michigan a week or so ago, and there were elected officials in my audience who came up to me afterwards and said, I had no idea this is what I was voting for. I thought we were voting on some bike paths or something.
Right.
And so I've got a state legislator in Michigan. I'm going back up at the end of February. I'm going to meet with legislators in the city, in the state capitol. Same thing's happened with elected officials. They're starting to, you know, I mean, county commissioners and so forth are starting to get it. I did in April testify before a committee in Maine on these things. And so we're starting to reach there. And this is where it'll begin to turn the corner. We've got in the state of Washington, state representative there, Matt Shea, who has put together a freedom coalition in the legislature. And he has passed just about 50 bills over the last three sessions, working on it right now as well, that are all designed to cut the size, power, and reach of cost of government. And so they're picking away at it that way. And we're working to try to get together a training seminar to come up with a legislative plan and teach these legislators how to go about this, to be effective, to have teeth with it. So it's baby steps, but we're starting to get where we need to be, and that's with elected officials.
So people who are listening, of course, this show is heard all over the world, and hopefully you need to be able to speak English to understand it. Thankfully, many people do, and it's not just happening in the United States, it's happening all over the world, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And Agenda 21 means the 21st century. Agenda 2030 is that they hope to make some serious inroads by 2030. Are they trying to accelerate the agenda? Do you think that they figure we got to move the envelope, push the envelope a little because people are catching on? Or why do you think they had to repackage this?
Yeah, that's exactly what I believe. I believe they're in a panic that they have seen. They originally wanted this done, I think, by 2000 was kind of their original kind of goal, and we've held it up, we've kept it back. You know, so I've been told that, like, for example, the head of ICLEI USA told an associate of mine that they were terrified of us because we have made them political poison. They can't get new cities to join them. And so I think they do feel that they need to get this done and get it past us, at least get it to the point of no return. So, yeah, they're trying.
Now, ICLEI is the International Council for Local Environmental Initiative, which was an entity formed shortly before the Agenda 21 conference in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. I'm of the opinion that this is, they call it an NGO, but if it's towns and cities and counties, isn't it more of a government-to-government thing than it is a private entity, even though there might be some private entities involved? If a city or a town or a county belongs to this, isn't this a government-to-government entity? And aren't when towns are joining, isn't this a violation of the Constitution, where Article 1, Section 10 says states can't form confederations?
Yeah, sure. The people who started pushing Agenda 21, when we started pushing back, and they kept saying, this is just voluntary. It's just a suggestion. Well, and of course, my favorite line they used on us was, there are no blue-helmeted troops at City Hall.
Right, right. They try to ridicule it. Yes,
yeah,
right.
My
opinion is you don't need blue-helmeted troops when you got people that have bought into this global agenda, this new world order, this one world government, the Constitution's outdated. You've had several generations of people have gone through public schools. You've had the UN Association. You've had all this propaganda in Hollywood and what have you. The UN is a great entity, and we should embrace it. The Constitution is written by a bunch of dead old Eurocentric males. So you don't have to bring in UN troops. Khrushchev said, your grandchildren will raise the flag of socialism. We don't have to come in. We're going to take it. You're falling from within.
Yeah, well, the thing is that they don't need blue-helmeted troops because they have the stormtroopers, the non-governmental organizations. These are the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, the Audubon Society. These organizations wrote Agenda 21, and they then made it their goal to put it in place. And so they're doing it behind the scenes, in the back rooms of your city hall and your county commissioners. And, as I said, they come in with it all in a box, and they have the money for it. And your elected officials, after they've heard this long enough, they begin to think this is the proper role of government. They don't even know any better.
They don't know any better, that's right.
They put it together, yeah.
They think isn't this the way the world works. In Boston, what's interesting, I was picking up a little weekly neighborhood paper that they, you know, free of charge, and it talked about, it was very matter-of-factly, like, and the average person looking at this and says, big deal, that the Rockefeller Foundation is partnering with Boston to promote this. City of Boston belongs to one of these international something cities about lowering your carbon footprint. I forget that there's so many of them that you, and they're making a big deal about it. And I actually wrote a letter to them, and they ran my letter, and I said, here's the city of Boston that has a reputation of being pretty dirty. And all of a sudden, we're going to reduce our carbon consumption by 15%. You can't even get the broken glass off the sidewalks, but we're going to reduce our carbon footprint by 15% in 5 years. You know, it's absurd. But, you know, again, people, people buy into it. And what's interesting, though, I think it's important, is that even in areas, liberal towns and cities where you think it's hopeless, even by when they know there's opposition, that they're being watched, I think it makes it a little more difficult. And I'll give a quick example, Keene, New Hampshire. Keene isn't too far away from Ringe, by the way, but you've got a liberal college town, and then you've got in Keene and Ringe, you've got a more people have been there for generations, you know, more conservative. But Keene, they almost defeated, there was a vernal pool bill where they were trying to get so many feet from a vernal pool is whatever they determine it is, you know, it could be a puddle. But they said 20, 50-foot buffer, whatever it was, but they actually lowered that, and it was only passed by one vote. And I'm thinking, yeah, even in a liberal town, there's still hope and opportunity, and you may not get everything you want, but at least you're getting something. And you know what? There are liberals who are against this too. You know, if I'm a liberal, I work hard. Liberals work hard for their money. Most of them do, just like most conservative or whatever. I want to be able to use my property. I shouldn't have to have the government tell me I can't put a little duck pond or I can't put a little wharf by my little, by my vernal pool if I wish. I'm a good steward of my property. It gets to the point where, like in Lexington, Massachusetts, I'm a trustee of a piece of property there, and we were going to plant Virginia rhododendrons. Now, I know you've probably been smuggling them up when you come up to New England.
I drop them as I come along.
But
yeah.
We had a I was just wasn't involved in that. I said we were just going to upgrade the property. And so they said you can't plant Virginia rhododendrons because they're not indigenous to New England. And I said, we've got to stop chopping down all the purple beech trees that, you know, that are brought in from the Orient. Or we're going to, you know, it's so ridiculous, you know. And then you have to submit the plan, and just it costs $2,000 or $3,000 just to submit the plan to the town, and then it has to be some kind of public notice, and will people testify against your rhododendrons and what have you? Well, Virginia rhododendrons will not do any harm to the ecosystem. It will probably make it better, but they say no, and it'll take just some ridiculous things.
I have an Ohio State buckeye tree in my front yard in Virginia, which has made the Japanese beetles extremely happy. But, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got to help the ecosystem
left.
All around. Yeah.
We've got 2 minutes left. How can people get a hold of you and learn more about this?
Well, our website, we're the American Policy Center, and our website's AmericanPolicy.org. And we've got a 15-year archive on there, articles on these subjects. You can learn a lot about it. We've got lots of tools we've created that some of them you can download right from the site. What I really try to tell people, you know, because it's such a huge issue to try to wrap your head around it, if you want to just really get it down to the basics, there are three ways they're attacking us here. They're attacking private property ownership. They are creating non-elected regional councils and regional governments, and they are funding it all through these federal grants. If you can begin to fight to protect private property rights, to stop the creation of these non-elected boards, and keep them as they did in Ringe, New Hampshire, to make it so that you cannot get a federal grant without a vote of the people, then you can put a real monkey wrench into their plans and begin to slow this thing down.
Well, again, thank you for being a guest on the show, and we really appreciate you at camp last year. Maybe a year from now we'll bring you back if you're available, hopefully, and we also have some of your presentations you gave at camp on our YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So if you go to our website, campconstitution.net, and you'll see a little link for YouTube. And you also gave us a presentation to a Republican group in while you were at camp as well, and I think we have that up. So God bless you all. Tom, thank you for all you do. And thank you, listeners, who faithfully tune in every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for this program. God bless.
Thank you.